Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order. Welcome, everyone, and thank you, committee, for coming on a Friday afternoon. And welcome Senator Hass, who is joining us by phone. Our agenda today is one item. It's a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2157A. So I will open a public hearing on House Bill 2157A. Chris.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, House Bill 2157A deals with Oregon's connection to federal law, and it does generally two things. It updates in our connection is updated from December 31st, 2007 to December 31st, 2008, generally, and then it also ends the rolling reconnect, the continuous reconnect to the definition of taxable income, and ties to the definition of taxable income as of December 31st, 2008. I do want to just quickly point out you have a number of documents in your packet. You have the SMS and the revenue impact. You also have a two-page brief from our office from January 2002 that provides some history of the Oregon Reconnect. There's also a one-page year-by-year summary history of the Federal Connection Code. And then there is a summary document pertaining to the bill, House Bill 2157A, that goes by section, and just for ease of reference, exactly which section does what. Generally speaking, there are three categories of laws that are addressed in the bill. Sections 1 to 10 deal with PERS tax qualification status. Most of the sections deal with personal and corporate income tax laws, and then one section deals with the unemployment insurance.
Okay, and then the section, just elaborate on the unemployment insurance section, if you would.
The unemployment insurance is in Section 27, and this was added to the Reconnect Bill in 2007. Prior to that, and throughout the unemployment insurance laws, there were a number of references to the Internal Revenue Code for various definitions. Prior to 2007, the last time that had been updated was 1954. So it got added to this, usually a biennial reconnect bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I think, do we have this chronology on the table back there?
Yes. Well, not on the table, Madam Chair. They're in the bins in the back of the room.
Okay, in the bins in the back of the room. I wanted to draw people's attention to the history and the committee, the history of Oregon's connection to the federal tax code. And you'll see a pattern here where we tend to disconnect during recessions and reconnect during better times, except for the early years where we were pretty much disconnected until, help me out here, Chris, until about 1987, correct?
Well, Madam Chair, for the most part, there was kind of a regular biennial update to the definitions. And then starting in 1997, we had the rolling reconnect, and that just pertains to taxable income.
Okay.
And then in 2003, there was a three-year disconnect from the definition of taxable income, and then that reset the rolling reconnect to 2006.
Right. So we've had some of everything in our history on this. So is that it? Chris, do you have more?
I should probably point out the summary sheet, just in categories, most of these connections that deal with a date in the bill pertain to charity definitions. A couple deal with income definitions. The rolling reconnect pieces are in sections 21, 23, and 24, where there you would see some language that's deleted. For example, in section 21, line 15, the language referring to the applicable to the tax year of the taxpayer, that language gets deleted and gets set to 2008. That's the ending of the rolling reconnect. And that same edit is made in Section 21 and Section 23 and Section 24 to cover both the personal income tax and the corporate income tax. The Section 21 deals with income tax generally, Chapter 314, Section 23 deals with the personal income tax, ORS Chapter 316, and Section 24 deals with the corporate section, Chapter 317. So that's where the rolling reconnect ends. And then two additional pieces in Sections 29 and 30 are language that also, if the policy is to end the rolling reconnect, their language needs to be changed there. And again, it's this change of for the tax year of the taxpayer to a specific date.
Correct.
That's how it's done.
The effect of this is to have a full rolling reconnect through December 31st, 2008, and then moving forward, we are not reconnected. We're disconnected.
Well, we are connected as of the definition on December 31st, 2008.
Okay, correct.
So it's not a disconnect from federal law entirely. It's connecting to the definition of taxable income as it existed on a specific
date. Thank you. That's what I meant to say. Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I ask Chris a question regarding that?
Please do.
If we connect to the Internal Revenue Code as it stands at 1231.08, do we have the opportunity during this session to revisit that?
Yes, Senator.
Okay.
And I believe a bill is being drafted on the House side to that effect.
To look at the connection for 09?
Correct.
Okay.
To revisit the issue.
Yes.
Instead of waiting till next session.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
All this does is it doesn't make it automatic, and we could revisit every single element that's being disconnected out. It's just we are not automatically committing to it for the future. And you will see a bill of that nature.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Let's start. We have Senator Boquist. You might testify on this.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Boquist, represent Senate District 12, which is rural portions of six counties here in the state. And I'll be brief, Madam Chair. I'd like to make two points. The first point I'd like to make is that everybody in the building is waiting for the federal stimulus package, everybody except my children. I've heard senators in public meetings in this building say that the federal government can simply print money to bail out states. Frankly, that is false. That is a lie. Each of my six children and my wife owe $34,392 in debt that must be repaid by the creditors of the United States of America. Creditors like China, Russia, and Arab oil sheiks and royal princes. When the federal stimulus package passes in the next few days, each of my six children and my wife will owe an additional $2,727 to the federal debt. Don't tell my children that a stimulus is to save them. Second point, I spent 2 years in the House Revenue Committee. I fully understand the issues, both political, legal, and in the statute, about the state-federal disconnect connection issues. I know exactly what legal counsel said in the last few days. This is technically not a tax increase until Congress passes the stimulus package. Legal doublespeak conceals nothing. The fact remains it will increase taxes almost immediately upon passage of the stimulus package, $96 million. For the record, $15 million of this tax increase will increase taxes on Oregon's unemployed citizens, unemployed Oregonians. The hardest hit citizens in Oregon are going to be punished by this bill. Citizens who lost their jobs, citizens who cannot afford milk, bread, meat, and rent are being thrown under the bus today by this bill and by the vote in the Oregon House of Representatives. I urge you, members of the Senate, not to lynch Oregon's unemployed citizens. There are people here who call the legislature theater. Let me make it clear to 189,000 unemployed citizens who are struggling to survive, many of them in my district, at times we'd be better off if the theater was burnt down. I urge you to vote no on this bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Boquist. Any questions from the committee? Thank you. Now we have a panel, J.L. Wilson, Bill Perry, and Sean Cleave.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, J.L. Wilson representing Associated Oregon Industries. Our members have asked us to take a position in opposition of the bill, so I am testifying in opposition. Not only do we feel that House Bill 2157 is premature because a federal stimulus package has yet to be passed, we also believe it violates our sound tax policy. We are very much in favor of the rolling reconnect. There will be others testifying to that effect of why it's good, but it has served Oregon's business community very well over the years. The thing that I want to talk about and concentrate my comments on is the message it sends, particularly to the business community, to disconnect at this time when the focus is on economic stimulus, the focus is on getting job creation and getting business moving again. We would like to see Oregon employers be able to take advantage of, in particular, the accelerated depreciation schedules. I can tell you from our family business's perspective, anecdotally, we emerged stronger out of the recession 6 or 7 years ago by virtue of the accelerated depreciation. What it did was it allowed us to purchase transmitters and translators that expanded our service territory that we would not have done had this not been in place. So it is important, and we have a small 20-person firm. We were able to expand our service territory and employ more folks on a long-term, ongoing basis precisely because we got upfront 50% depreciation on that capital equipment. And which leads me to our biggest point is I think the worst outcome that could be achieved is that we actually discourage Oregon companies from taking advantage of purchasing capital equipment because we're putting a roadblock in their way. We're saying in Oregon, for Oregon companies, we don't think you should be able to take advantage of this on your Oregon state returns. And I think the worst outcome is that our companies don't take advantage of purchasing capital equipment. We are of the firm belief that every dollar spent in this building is a product of economic activity generated in the private sector. To do that, you absolutely need capital, and I don't think that this state should be engaged in standing in the way of capital accumulation or business owners making that type of investment. So that is our viewpoint on this issue, and you understand why we then oppose the measure.
For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Association, and I would like to specifically address the one point that Mr. Wilson brought up, which is the accelerated depreciation schedule. This is something, obviously, at the federal level we've been lobbying for several years to try to get passed, and then to see it come potentially to fruition and only get partial benefit from it is a little bit discouraging. And I would just say that as we look at small businesses versus big businesses, obviously I think this is a benefit to bigger corporations, but they will look at this as one small piece of a decision process. I think when you look at small businesses, this could be the determining factor of whether or not they're going to buy equipment in the near future. And I think the benefit that is provided under the depreciation schedule could encourage a lot of small restaurants to get equipment purchases just because of the benefit of the increased depreciation. And so I would hope or ask you not to disconnect from the depreciation schedule, because I do think it will benefit a lot of the small businesses across the state when they're having a hard time. As most of you know, in December, January, and February, their costs have been increasing and their customer accounts have been declining. So this would be a tremendous benefit to try to get them to do some purchasing over the next few months.
Thanks. For the record, Sean Cleave, Oregon Farm Bureau. I'd like to echo what JL and Bill Perry both said, but make an emphasis for Oregon farmers and ranchers. The depreciation schedule is a tremendous advantage when it's compressed, especially when you consider some of our eastern Oregon farmers who have large equipment costs. A combine, for example, can cost up to 4 to 5 times the amount of the average Oregonian's house. So these things really do mean the difference between purchasing and not purchasing. And when we're talking about stimulating the economy, it just makes all sorts of sense to stay connected to that portion. So,
thank you. Questions? Thank you very much. Okay, Rob Douglas. Welcome.
Chair Burke, thank you. Members of the committee, my name is Rob Douglas. I represent the Oregon Society of Certified Public Accountants. Joan Buck and I have had the privilege of representing the CPAs in Oregon for three decades. During that entire time of service, we have consistently argued in favor of what we call tax conformity, keeping the Oregon tax code and the federal tax code as much in line as possible. We think this benefits taxpayers, but we are not being completely altruistic. It also benefits tax practitioners, because to the extent that the codes depart, diverge, it creates all sorts of problems for people preparing taxpayers, preparing tax returns for Oregon taxpayers. We think every time you disconnect where the codes do not match up, you increase complexity, and you set the stage for more noncompliance than you would otherwise have. I've given you my statement. This is the same statement we used in opposition to this bill on the House floor. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so I think everybody knows, I am a CPA and a member of the Oregon Society of CPAs. But, Rob, I have a question regarding what the profession does usually. The analysis changes in federal tax laws. I know there is one out for 2008. That has not been presented to us. Is that normal, or can you explain that document and why we haven't gotten it?
Chair Burdick, Senator Telfer, you are correct. Normally this is a much more deliberative process. The tax team of the Oregon Society of CPAs works very long hours, very hard, to prepare information for both revenue committees. We come down and testify to that information. It's in the form of a booklet. Sometimes that testimony takes 2 days. What we do is we go through the federal tax code. We update the Oregon Legislative Assembly on the changes in that tax code, how that affects the Oregon tax code, and what the implications of each of those changes could be. So,
follow-up question. Thank you, Rob. And this is that report. As of the Internal Revenue Code 123108, if in fact the Internal Revenue Code changes subsequent to congressional changes in the next couple of days, would the OSCPA be issuing an additional analysis and recommendation to the state legislature on what we should do?
That is correct. When you are in session, we update you on the federal changes, what Oregon would need to do to conform to those changes, and what we think the policy considerations are. The booklets, very frankly, are not done yet. We will have possession of the booklets next week. That's what the CPAs testify from. Traditionally, what we do is we bring the booklets to Salem. We share them with legislative revenue staff, the Department of Revenue. We give them a certain amount of time to digest that. There's some conversation going back and forth between legislative revenue, Department of Revenue, the state CPAs. Then we come before the revenue committees and go through the process that I described.
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much, Rob. Okay. Mark Nelson and Mike Dewey.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson. I represent the Oregon Mills Industry Council and the Northwest Food Processors Association. These are two sectors in your manufacturing industry in the state, and they couldn't be farther apart in terms of what's taking place in those industries. In the metals industry, of course, we're shedding jobs, and we've been losing jobs really back to the midsummer. On the flip side, the Northwest Food Processors, as was just reported today, have had an increase of 1,000 jobs in their particular sector. Thank God everyone still wants to eat. But it's a really interesting dichotomy in terms of a state in which the manufacturing sector generally is losing jobs. We believe that the disconnect is premature at this point in time, that the message to the business community is that the bonus depreciation is not something that's valuable to stimulating the economy, and we welcome what the chair said, that we will review this at some point in the future. I would just like to comment that the longer that takes is a period of time in which industry in this state doesn't do the planning. If they knew today that there would be a reconnect, they can start that planning now in terms of their acquisitions, their machinery, and capital acquisitions. I'd like to just make a couple, read a quote from the Wall Street Journal regarding the stimulus package. The Democrats' plan provides incentives for businesses to make capital expenditures. The bonus depreciation provision, for example, would provide immediate relief for businesses that invest in new plants and equipment by speeding up depreciation deductions. The package doubles the amount small businesses can immediately write off for capital investments and for purchasing new equipment, and includes incentives for businesses to invest in renewable energy. And it goes on to, there's another quote from the president, and talking about why he is moving, and says, that's why I'm moving quickly to work with my economic team and leaders of both parties on an American recovery and reinvestment plan that will immediately jumpstart job creation and long-term growth. We would submit that what applies on the national level really also applies here. That I hate to see a delay for businesses to not start planning what they can be doing now and looking at what they need to purchase in the long term for their equipment and be able to plan on this bonus depreciation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mike?
Thank you very much. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing NFIB. I want to introduce Jenna Calusa, who's in the back of the room, who is with NIB. She's in her second week, so she's getting her legs getting ready for this session. And
Would you like her to join you, Mike?
Yeah, why don't you come on? Makes sense. Jenna was with the Oregon Home Builders. Different name now. She was married about a year ago, and had moved to Seattle and is back in Oregon. So I want you to make sure this is the voice of NFIB. I'm here perhaps because I have more gray hair and I've been through these tax struggles from time to time. So not more to be said other than on the other side, this was called a timeout. And we don't know how long this timeout's going to be. We're thankful that you said we're going to revisit this. I understand you will, but is it next session? We don't know. Is it in May? We don't know. But we know that there is a disconnect, and not a disconnect in the terms of where we are, but an actual disconnect from the federal code. Everything that has been said by the previous individuals that oppose this legislation, we think is extremely true. That we think that the federal bill, and you passed a state bill to stimulate the economy, if it works, it's going to be a long-term fix, not a short-term fix. We look at this as a short-term fix for you in terms of a budget. But from the standpoint of the business community, we look at the depreciation rules and bonus depreciation as a long-term fix, which is going to help the economy more so than if this bill were to pass. So we can't support it. We think it sends the wrong message at the wrong time. I do recall seeing an op-ed, and somebody wrote that Senator McCain's economic team didn't support these kinds of provisions. And I think it was because he was the Republican, and the thought was that Republicans wouldn't support this. Well, I recall that also Senator McCain said, I don't really understand the economy either. And so I don't think he does understand the economy if people are going to talk about R's and D's. So from our perspective, we don't think it's a timeout. We're concerned that this is a real timeout, and we're not going to get, in metaphorical terms, back in the ballgame. And we think we ought to be in the ballgame, be able to use these tools as soon as possible to make some investments here in Oregon. So we thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Jody Weiser and John Mullen.
Jody Weiser, for the record, with Tax Fairness Oregon. I think I'm going to start with the moral side of this. Being disconnected from federal tax law changes is not rocket science. Businesses are used to having many sets of books, so that's not really a problem. They need to have different things, different sets of books for different states as it is. So the fact that they would need a new depreciation schedule isn't a problem. And the fact is that in the 2003-2004 slowdown in the economy, our state joined 30 of the 42 states that have income tax in disconnecting from the federal code. It's kind of like what you do when you need to watch your budget. In the long run, tax codes, just like budgets, are moral works. You were elected to make those moral judgments about the business of Oregon. It's you who should decide whether our tax code benefits wealthy 70-and-a-half-year-olds with excess money in their IRAs or class size and medical care. It's you who should decide if more paperwork for some or not quite getting as big a tax break because they only get the federal piece and not the state piece, or more money available for court services, hunger relief, or operating an effective government is of higher worth. By disconnecting, you put more responsibility on your own shoulders, but you control, because you control the amount of money available for Oregonians. It won't be easy to decide if taxing unemployment compensation is better or worse than cutting Head Start funding, but the job is yours. If you disconnect, you keep that job on your shoulders. If you connect, you let someone else make the decisions for our state. I would urge you to disconnect from the code, in part because it's the way you control the destiny of this state and what it can provide its citizens, and in part because it's a good business sense. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen, co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon. We came together about in the early to mid-1980s, and we're now a group of about 80 organizations and individuals, and we are advocating always for the needs of vulnerable Oregonians. Very early on, we recognized we also needed to be involved in tax and revenue issues. And towards about the end of the 1980s, we came up with a number of budget principles, which may seem familiar these days because they were fairness, adequacy, and stability, which was also something that was discussed in the recent Revenue Restructuring Task Force. So we are urging that you would consider voting yes on House Bill 2157A. We know that these are challenging times, and the changes, though, that might be coming from the federal government, if you vote yes on this, you have maximum flexibility in determining what's right by measuring up to criteria such as the Human Services Coalition's criteria, the Revenue Restructuring Task Force criteria, about what's going to be best for Oregon. So I would like to see the legislature have that kind of flexibility. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Jody. You referred to the science or lack of need to be a rocket scientist to do a tax. Are you a licensed tax preparer or a certified public accountant, therefore capable of doing tax returns in the state of Oregon?
I used to be capable of doing my own tax return, but that's it, and I pay someone else to do that now myself.
That's a little bit of rocket science.
Thank you. Thank
right. I can kind of feel the temperature go up here. Which
But having one more form is not a big problem. I mean, if what we were doing here was passing out money, we would not have any objections to the fact that it would require another piece of paper. It's only when we're removing money from business that complaint is apt to come up. And the other thing I thought you would mention, John, is that if we preserve a piece of money for our budget instead of giving it away in a tax credit, it means $2.66 if we use it for something where we get a federal match. And right now we're leaving federal match money on the table. So if we give away money in a tax credit, we don't have it to spend on human services where we get a federal match. And I doubt that if you had an analysis by economists about the equipment that may actually be cutting jobs, because you might be mechanizing something that hired people and actually having fewer employees after you get it, use your bonus depreciation. I don't think you're going to get a $2.66 return on investment for the bonus depreciation that we might otherwise be connected to.
Thank you.
Point of clarification, we're not talking about tax credits. We're talking about taxable income as defined in the Internal Revenue
Code.
Correct.
It's deduction.
Right. You're right. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Andy Miller. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Burdick, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Andy Miller, Senior Policy Analyst for Oregon Business Association, and I'm wearing red today. Isn't this Wear Red Day? You remember it.
I got the memo.
Oregon Business Association advocates for long-term enhancement of Oregon's business environment and quality of life, providing bipartisan, statewide business leadership that strives to ensure Oregon's long-term prosperity. Our members include businesses of all sizes and industries throughout the state, from our largest farm to two Fortune 500 companies. OBA's members believe that connection to the federal tax code regarding bonus depreciation is valuable and encourages administrative ease. At the same time, we recognize the potential budget impact and the difficult funding decisions the legislature will face as a result. Therefore, OBA has elected to take a neutral position on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Andy. Any questions from the committee? Thank you very much. That concludes our sign-up sheet. Is there anybody else who, Mr. Sheketoff?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chuck Sheketoff, Oregon Center for Public Policy. I'll be brief. I just want to address a couple issues. First, you know, we have always traditionally gone through the CPA report, which is very useful and generally connect to most everything that's happened. I can tell you that once I was trained in learning about the tax code and how it affects low-income Oregonians, I learned that we were not connected on the issue of the earned income tax credit. It's probably because most CPAs don't do a lot of returns for people who get the earned income tax credit. And maybe that wasn't in their book for many years. And it wasn't until the mid-1990s that Oregon finally recognized that credit and connected to it. And this bill is connecting you to both all the above the line definition of taxable income and below the line credits as of December 31st, 2008. That's my understanding of the bill. And you can check with staff. So when you get the CPAs can either hang on to their report or not print it and save some trees, or you bring it in to talk about what you might want to disconnect from that's in this thing. But this is what you're doing. You're connecting as of December 31st for the below the line, and then on the above the line, you're getting rid of the automatic connection. You're putting in that date. And we don't know what's going to be in the stimulus bill, but there's going to be probably things both above and below the line. There's going to be the above the line, as Senator Boquist mentioned, on some of your unemployment insurance income will be not taxable income, as one of the proposals, like the first 24 or 2900 in one of the versions. If that survives, both the Senate, which is voting today, hopefully, and then the conference committee next week, you'll have to decide whether to grant that instead of it being automatic. There's also a number of things that are below the line that you'll have to decide, like a temporary expansion of the earned income credit for families with three or more children. That's one of the proposals in the House pass version of it. If that makes it into the Senate side, you'll decide whether to do that. And so, you know, this bill it is connecting you. It's not a disconnect bill. It's a connection bill. It's connecting you to December 31st, and it's putting everything on equal footing, that once Congress acts, as the chair said, you will have an opportunity to go through everything they've done in that bill or anything they do prior to sine die and decide whether to adopt it. It puts them all on equal footing with simple majority votes, yay or nay, on whether to agree to what they have done.
Thank you. Did you have a handout?
A memo was, I think, distributed by staff.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. Anybody else out there? Okay. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2157A and open a work session on House Bill 2157A. Senator Hass, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you... okay, I just want to make sure you were there. I would turn this over to Senator Rosenbaum for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Bill 2157A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 2157A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of the most troublesome things about this bill is it's a reflection of, I guess, what I would call to be a perceived culture that's pervading the legislature. We passed a debt capital bonding bill for many projects that would never rise to the level of sufficiency were we in a normal circumstance. And that action was based on the creation of jobs. But yet, I think the troublesome thing that I'm talking about is a lack of awareness of the economic engine of this state. It isn't spending on government projects, and it isn't spending. It's allowing the business community to make the investments to create the jobs and provide stimulus where it's appropriate that will accomplish that. And I think this, the hurry up to disconnect is sending a message that the business community is just not the player that it really is in our economy. Government does not create jobs. The business sector creates jobs. And the message we're sending to all businesses, small, medium, large, is that economic stimulus for them and their operations is not the priority of the day. And I know that we're going to be coming back and having the opportunity to revisit that, those issues. But, you know, this bill, as it stands today, is just fouling the gears of the economic engine of Oregon.
Thank you, Senator Morris. Senator Telfer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I concur with the eloquent comments of Senator Morris. I would also like to say that, you know, we've heard from the business community today, all of which have discouraged us from disconnecting, so to speak, because that's really what we're doing. And they are the ones that employ people and give them paychecks that put food on their tables and clothe their children and a roof over their family's head. We've also heard from the professionals who have to deal with the tax code and implement it. And again, they discouraged us from moving forward with this bill. And we also heard that this is really legal double speech. And I would concur. You know, we're rushing something so that we can get in before the stimulus is passed, so that anything we do is then, therefore, a tax increase. And it takes a little bit different vote and input from the citizens of this state to move forward with that. So I'm disappointed. I'm just disappointed in the political maneuvering that's occurring here today so that we can raise taxes on Oregonians in these times of need when they need more money in their pockets. So I'll be voting no.
Thank you. Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess for me I see it a little differently. I always thought that signing up for duty on this committee would be about making tough choices. I don't find this a particularly tough choice, and maybe that's partly because I hearken back to when there was a previous chair of this committee who became the chair of the Joint Revenue Restructuring Task Force, who spoke eloquently about the need to make choices at a state level that might be different from the ones that the federal government had made. And I was pretty persuaded when he spoke about that, and the legislature made the choice to do that. So I think I would agree with my colleagues that times are tough, but for me, this isn't really about all these values-laden sort of inflammatory words on both sides that I've been hearing. It's really about simply making what I think is a pragmatic choice to be able to decide for the state of Oregon what is best. I just see it as that, and that's why I made the motion. So,
thank you, Senator Rosenbaum. Senator Haas?
I'm ready to vote.
Okay, thank you. And thank you for this hearing, everyone. This is, for me, a very difficult issue because if you had to pin me down and say my number one priority for this session, it's jobs because of the economic circumstances that we're in. And so I resonate very much with the people who came up to speak in opposition to this bill. What this bill does, and I invite people to participate, what this bill does is it takes the bonus depreciation issue and puts it on the table with other proposals we have and other programs we have in Oregon to stimulate jobs. All it does is it takes this program and it does not put it automatically to the head of the line. It puts it on an equal footing with some other programs like the Business Energy Tax Credit and like some other, in fact, even some new programs that I'm looking at to try to build jobs in a hurry to help our economy. We are in a dire situation in the state now, and we do not have the ability to go into debt like the federal government does. We must balance our budget, and so in order to do that, we need to have the kind of flexibility to decide on a very real-time basis where we are going to get the biggest bang, both in stimulus and in the programs that we have to fund in this state, where we are going to get the biggest bang for the taxpayers' buck. And it may be that this program emerges as something that will be very worthy, in which case we can reconnect to it. And there is a time delay, and that's unfortunate. But this program will not be at the head of the line, and neither will anything else in the stimulus package. They will be on an equal footing with other programs we have, and that's all we're doing today. So we have a motion on the floor. We have objections, but I would like to have a roll call vote.
Senator Hatch?
Hatch votes aye.
Senator Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Senator Telfer?
Nay.
Senator Morris?
No.
Chair Burdick?
Burdick votes aye. And
Madam Chair?
Senator Telfer?
I'd like to serve notice of a possible minority report.
Senator Telfer has served notice of a possible minority report. Okay. And the chair will carry the bill. Any other business for the committee? We are adjourned.